the U.S. Senate procrastinates again on FAA funding. The Pentagon says it will shoot down that failing spy satellite. And a U.S. senator chews out the Air Force over nuclear security. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Friday, February 15th, 2008. If you're starting to think the FAA reauthorization and user fee battles may go on forever, we can't blame you. On Tuesday, the U.S. House of Representatives passed yet another temporary extension on aviation taxes and the FAA's budget, keeping the agency in business until June 30th. The Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association tells ANN the Senate promptly approved the House extension without debate. The House passed a permanent FAA funding bill back in September, but the Senate has yet to resolve differences between its own two funding bills, one with user fees, one without. Either one would require reconciliation with the House bill, followed by the President's signature. Minnesota Congressman James Oberstar, chairman of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, sounds frustrated with the Senate. Quote, "The House has done its job on aviation. The other body sits over there in splendid isolation, as though nothing else in the world matters," unquote. One bright spot, the House extension bill would allow the FAA to resume spending Airport Improvement Program funds through June 30th. Those funds have been frozen since the previous 10-year FAA reauthorization expired last year. The Associated Press is reporting that the Pentagon has decided to intercept a falling spy satellite with a missile fired from a U.S. Navy cruiser sometime next week. As ANN reported, the satellite was launched from California just over a year ago, but stopped responding to commands from Earth shortly after it reached orbit. The plan is aimed at protecting those on the ground from hazardous materials on board that satellite, including its nearly full hydrazine fuel tank. But the Department of Defense is also reported to be concerned that a top-secret imaging sensor on the satellite might survive reentry and fall into the hands of China, Russia, or Iran. There's no way to accurately predict exactly where the satellite's carcass would land. The DOD admits the plan to use missiles to destroy the satellite presents challenges. Quote, "Because our missile defense system is not designed to engage satellites, extraordinary measures have been taken to temporarily modify three sea-based tactical missiles and three ships to carry out the engagement," unquote. The plan will also target the missile near the end of its arc, when chances of creating orbital debris from an explosion are minimized. Officials say that left intact, as much as half the satellite's 5,000-pound mass might have survived re-entry, so hitting it with a missile is in the best interests of civilians on the ground. Michigan Senator Carl Levin, chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, slammed the U.S. Air Force Tuesday for last August's oversight, in which a B-52 flew from Minot Air Force Base in North Dakota to Louisiana's Barksdale Air Force Base, carrying six advanced cruise missiles with nuclear warheads. The Associated Press reports that despite assurances from U.S. Air Force officials that chances of a nuclear accident were very, very unlikely, Levin called the incident an unprecedented security failure and a wake-up call. Quote, "As long as the United States has nuclear weapons, they must be handled with the utmost security and attention," unquote. The senator went on to assert that such inattention to security is common within the Defense Department. As ANN reported, 70 Air Force airmen were punished for their involvement after an investigation found that rules for handling such munitions were ignored. Only the missiles were supposed to be transported. The warheads were supposed to be removed prior to flight, but that wasn't done, and no one noticed the mistake until over a day after the flight. Among the highest ranked to receive punishment was the 5th Bomb Wing Commander at Minot, Colonel Bruce Emig, who had served as the base commander since June. South Dakota Senator John R. Thune said he was concerned the accidental flight is a sign nuclear safety protocols are slipping with the passage of time. Quote, "This illustrates everyone is human, but we cannot tolerate mistakes," unquote. Faced with congressional inaction on an airline passenger's Bill of Rights following last winter's JetBlue tarmac strandings, the state of New York passed its own passenger's rights law. The airlines immediately challenged that state law in federal court, claiming it violated federal authority to regulate airline services. But U.S. District Court Judge Lawrence Kahn let that law stand, saying the requirements for drinking water, snacks, fresh air, and waste removal for passengers who are kept on board grounded airliners longer than 3 hours was not about airline services, but about health and safety. The airlines have appealed, but in the meantime, the success of the New York law has prompted similar initiatives in many other states. The San Francisco Chronicle reports there's now one in the works in California. San Francisco City Assemblyman Mark Leno is currently campaigning for a seat in the state Senate in this fall's election. Wednesday, he announced a bill patterned after New York's at a press conference. Quote, "The status quo is really a tragedy waiting to happen. We should not have to relinquish access to these basic human needs just because we board an airplane," unquote. The paper reports the state legislature will consider the measure. The Air Transport Association, an airline industry lobby group, has been granted an expedited hearing on its appeal of the New York law. That hearing is expected early next month. The Coalition for an Airline Passengers Bill of Rights, started by former stranded passenger Kate Hanai, has been helping states draft their own laws after a federal passengers bill of rights stalled in the U.S. Senate. While the airline lobby has well-cultivated relationships in the U.S. Senate, it has not been able to stop state laws, which are moving swiftly. Or, as Kate recently told us, quote, "We're stinging them like a beehive," unquote. Up next on ANN, Boeing finally gets FAA certification for its new military tanker. Delta and Northwest are said to be getting close on a merger. And NASA extends the Atlantis crew's stay in space. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for February 15th, 2008. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. It's been a long time coming. Wednesday, Boeing announced completion of FAA certification requirements for Japan's first KC-767 tanker, earning a supplemental type certificate. George Hildebrand, the Boeing KC-767 Japan program manager, reminded us of the special challenges presented by the contract. Quote, "The Japan Air Self-Defense Force asked us to complete passenger and main deck cargo certifications beyond what is normally performed on military aircraft. Boeing is ready to deliver the first tankers in Japan's history and the most advanced tanker in the world today," unquote. FAA certification is not required for military aircraft in the U.S., but Japan had insisted on it as part of its contract for four of the planes. That certification was delayed a year by a minor problem with a valve, which regulates airflow and pressurization in the passenger cabin section of the aircraft. Boeing is in a competition for a U.S. Air Force tanker contract with a Northrop Grumman EADS consortium, pitting the Boeing KC-767 against an Airbus tanker based on the A330 airliner. EADS has recently used delays in Japanese and Italian deliveries by Boeing to try to convince the U.S. Air Force that choosing the KC-30 would represent lower risk. Completion of the testing for the certification of the planes for Japan should help Boeing obtain FAA certification for Italy's version of the KC-767 in time to begin those deliveries later this year. Well, it's now time for our daily pregame coverage of airline merger mania. Bloomberg is quoting unnamed sources who say executives at Delta Airlines and Northwest Airlines have reached agreement on major terms of a rumored merger between the two carriers. The resulting company would instantly be the largest U.S. airline in terms of passenger traffic. The reports say the new airline would keep the Delta name and be based in Atlanta, Georgia. Delta CEO Richard Anderson would run the combined airline, according to this report. Air France KLM will be an investor in exchange for a board seat. The size of Air France's potential stake hasn't been set, but earlier reports placed it at 19%. Adding credibility to the reports a merger announcement is near was official word from Delta on Wednesday that Anderson agreed to waive millions of dollars in payments, which would be due him under terms of his contract if a merger took place. Reuters reported that insiders believe a merger announcement is now expected within weeks. On Wednesday, NASA extended the Space Shuttle Atlantis's stay at the International Space Station by a day, giving the seven-member STS-122 crew additional time to make sure the newly installed Columbus Laboratory is up and running properly. Commands to Columbus from a ground station near Munich were delayed when the European computer system had difficulty communicating with one built by the U.S. The decision to give the mission more time came after European Space Agency astronauts Rex Walheim and Hans Schlegel successfully completed the second of three scheduled spacewalks outside the orbital laboratory. Schlegel showed no signs of discomfort during the spacewalk. He had been sidelined from his first scheduled spacewalk due to an unspecified illness. Atlantis will now undock from the space station on Monday and land at 9:06 a.m. Eastern Time on Wednesday at Florida's Kennedy Space Center. Even as the U.S. Congress warms to the idea that the Air Force's F-15s are going to need to be replaced, a battle is brewing over which plane should replace the Eagle, the F-22 Raptor, or the forthcoming F-35 Joint Strike Fighter. The Defense Times reports U.S. Deputy Defense Secretary Gordon England clashed with Democratic lawmakers on the House Appropriations Defense Subcommittee Wednesday, arguing for sticking to the current plan to shut down production of the F-22 after 183 units and start buying the much less expensive F-35. The aircraft were designed for different roles. The Raptor, at $122 million a copy, was conceived as an air-to-air superiority fighter, which would be crucial in countering potential future threats from a well-funded superpower such as China or Russia. In that sense, it is similar in mission to the early F-15s. The F-35, which is cheap by comparison at $35 million each, was developed primarily as a ground attack aircraft, closer in spirit to the latest F-15E Strike Eagle. It could be very effective against ground-based enemies such as Al-Qaeda, but that focus may need to change in the future. Pennsylvania Congressman John Murtha, an F-22 supporter, pointed out that if the Air Force is allowed to purchase the 381 planes at once, the per-jet price could drop as much as 10 or 12%. The Government Accountability Office projected in 2006 that if production indeed stops at 183 F-22s, as currently budgeted, program costs will have totaled $62 billion, making the true unit cost for the Raptor $339 million per plane. Still ahead, injuries, but no fatalities reported in a regional jet crash. NASA's Michael Griffin fights for a return to the moon. And Airbus says it may build A380 flying casinos. You're listening to Aero News.
Welcome to Cirrus Design. Maker of the world's best-selling personal aircraft, the sleek SR-22. Cirrus planes feature the latest technologies and are equipped with an exclusive, life-saving parachute system. It is our mission to make personal aviation safe, affordable, and convenient. At Cirrus, we offer a test drive like no one else in the business.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Friday, February 15th, 2008. I'm Paul Plagg. BBC News reports a CRJ-100 regional airliner, operated by Belarusian state airline Belavia, had a wing touch the ground, cartwheeled, and burst into flames shortly after takeoff Thursday from Yerevan Zvarnots Airport in Armenia. Amazingly, reports indicate all 21 people on board the airliner survived. BBC News reports the CRJ had just departed from Minsk about 4:15 a.m. local time Thursday morning. According to Gayan Davtyan, a spokeswoman for Armenia's Civil Aviation Authority, quote, "nearly everyone on board received burns of various degrees," unquote. There's no immediate indication of the cause of the accident other than the unconfirmed reports of a roll to one side after takeoff, bringing a wing in contact with the ground. Check aeronews.net over the weekend for updates on this story in print form. In the more than 30 years since the last Apollo moon mission, many have questioned a U.S. space policy which never returned. The long absence also played to conspiracy theorists who promoted the idea that NASA never actually landed there. And so it is with some irony that NASA Administrator Michael Griffin now finds himself defending NASA's plan to return to the moon from critics in Congress who say it's a waste of resources in what should be a quest to explore Mars. Florida Today reports Griffin told the House Science and Technology Committee on Wednesday, quote, "I'm always intrigued by the idea that since we spent a few days on the moon, that the place is now uninteresting for all future time, and that we should ignore it and head straight for Mars. The moon is 3 days and 250,000 miles from home. When we return to the moon, we will have not been there for 50 years, unquote. Griffin's comments come as he defends his portion of the Bush budget proposal for fiscal 2009. Some in Congress have suggested the appropriation being requested is inadequate for the agency's stated goal of reaching Mars. Others want the shuttle fleet kept in operation after its now planned 2010 retirement date to avoid reliance on Russian launch vehicles while newer NASA craft are developed. Griffin says that would be counterproductive. Quote, "Money spent flying the shuttle after 2010 is not available for Ares and Orion, which causes the gap between shuttle retirement and deployment of new systems to grow, and with it, the duration of dependence on Russian systems," unquote. Ko San is a 30-year-old computer science engineer who's expected to become the first South Korean in space. He's scheduled to ride a Russian rocket to the International Space Station in April. It turns out his trip will also mark a second historic event. He'll be bringing the first Korean cuisine into space. CNN quotes the Yonhap News Agency in reporting that fresh and cooked kimchi has been approved by Russian space officials for the ISS menu, along with spicy chili paste, rice, bean paste soup, instant noodles, sweet cinnamon punch, ginseng teas, and a mixed grain and vegetable bar. The Korea Aerospace Research Institute and Korea Food Research Institute reportedly spent 2 years researching preparation of the foods for space and report they displayed excellent preservation characteristics. This will be the first time the space station's menu has strayed beyond American and Russian cuisine. Hey, go easy on that bean paste soup. Those windows don't open. And finally, when you visit Las Vegas, it's overwhelming to see the money spent on the hotels and casinos there. Floating casinos on cruise ships have been with us for years, and the game of poker was invented on a Mississippi riverboat over a century ago. So it should come as no surprise that Airbus now says it's had interest in turning the A380, the world's largest airliner, into a flying casino. The plane has 50% more floor space than a Boeing 747, and has already pulled in over 200 firm orders, many from areas of Asia where economies and gambling are now booming. The AFP News Service reports gaming revenues from the southern Chinese territory of Macau have already overtaken the Las Vegas Strip and may surpass those of the greater Las Vegas region in 2008. Singapore will open its first casino next year. So, assuming engineers can solve the problems posed by roulette wheels that move by themselves when the plane turns, or dice which take an extra hop when you go through turbulence, how soon might we see an A380 filled with gaudy carpets, scantily clad hostesses, and rows of mesmerized senior citizens staring at slot machines? Well, Airbus says the first A380 flying casino could enter service in 2012, but declined to give odds. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guest is Betty Wilson, who administers the Virginia Aviation Ambassador Awards Program. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend, and have a clear and unlimited day.